Glad everyone was able to make it tonight. The topic of discussion is not necessarily a pleasant one, but it's one that is hopefully super, super important and one that is super impactful, makes a big impact. And only if this is really my first time really putting this this concept together and stating it in such a way, but hopefully the concept is definitely true, but if something that I'm missing or don't give it out in a proper way, hopefully the feeling and the idea and concept will be clear, because I think it's an incredibly powerful one. Again, incredibly powerful one that will could potentially, if internalized, really make a conceptual difference in understanding life. So this time frame right now we're in, we do a lot of different customs. One custom, as you can see, is we don't shave, right? That's why everyone has commented on, have I become a hipster? That's not, that's always true. But the aspect of the beard is really an aspect or a sign of mourning. It's the time frame of what we call 3 weeks. And within 3 weeks, that's actually why we're having pizza, not because we decided pizza night, but because we're not allowed to have
meat.
So also another thing we're going to have about meat. There's aspect, don't sit too close to me, but aspect of reduction in wearing clean clothes. So not these are dirty, but they're not fresh. I actually intentionally wore this shirt and pants previously for about an hour or so. As Tova, there's like a whole exercise as you go and you change shirts and wear them for at least an hour, so they're not no longer freshly laundered and crisp. Okay, yeah. So what's the idea of that? That you're not wearing like, you know, feeling crispy, clean clothes and feel amazing, right? Other custom that's done is we don't shower with hot water, like a pleasurable shower. So we actually shower with not freezing cold water, but tepid water in order not to get full pleasure from the experience of showering. And what's this whole business about? What's the source? So it says that during the month of Av, this is now the month of Av, the Gemara tells us, Mishnah tells us, Mema'atim b'simcha. We reduce the happiness. We reduce the happiness. Now tell me, what is the purpose of reducing happiness? Anyone understand why we want to reduce happiness? I get it, you want to mourn, but What is the purpose and essence of reducing happiness? Why would you want to reduce your happiness? In essence, in our day and age, you know, when so many people are, God forbid, suffering from depression and difficulty in their lives, you're like, you know what? You're depressed. Let's reduce your happiness even more. Like, let's take you off what is it?
Xanax.
Let's take you off the Xanax, right? Let's make sure this month we're gonna make you even sadder. Do you hear this? Does it make any sense? Why would we want to intentionally reduce our level of happiness?
Is it to empathize with those that we lost?
Okay, I hear the idea of empathy, but it has to be. Which will lead me to the next question, which is a perfect lead-in. Yeah.
Appreciate being happy.
Okay, appreciate being happy, but it's like, In that, and I, that methodology, you can ask the same question, which is really the same question I'm asking. So let's smack your, you know, smack another person as hard as they can, and now you should appreciate not being smacked. Thank you so much for that one, right? Right? I mean, that's the idea.
Should feel like it's happening as if it's happening back then.
Oh, so we'll get to that.
Isn't it good to, like, be aware that you're not where you're meant to be, so you shouldn't...
Excellent. No, good point. We'll get to that template. We'll get to that also. The next idea is very clear and very pronounced. The idea that we're not a sentimental people. The Jewish people, we're not a sentimental people. Even though you might say, oh, what are you talking about, Rabbi? And we have tongue on Rosh Hashanah. We always have tongue. And then my grandmother, she always brings this special tongue. And then we do all these special customs on this day. We dip the honey. We take the fruit. We dip the honey and the apple. I mean, of course we do all these customs. And it seems like the Jewish people are so many different customs that it's like, really? You're going to tell me we're not sentimental people? We're not living in the past? We're not just, you know, observing traditions that our great-great grandparents have observed? That's not what we're doing? The answer is absolutely not. We are emphatically not doing traditions simply for the fact that our great-grandparents did that. Quite opposite. We've discussed this many times, we are into reality. We are not into contrived ideas of folklore and Jewish culture. I'm sorry to say this, and it's being recorded, maybe I shouldn't say it, but I'll say it anyway. We are not into Jewish culture. Culture as Jewish being is a slap into the face of what we really are. I understand, now let me make a side point. I understand where people are coming from and saying it's a nice idea, it's a nice concept, and it keeps us together, this idea of Jewish culture and carrying on tradition. Yes. But in essence, to the core, you're missing out so much of the heart and understanding of what the Jewish people are really about that it's almost a disgrace to say it's Jewish culture. It's reducing the level and authenticity of what it really is. And that's why, I mean, we're not into Jewish culture or Jewish traditions. We're into Jewish reality. Now what is it? What does that really mean? So we've discussed many times, and I'm going to say it relatively quickly because I know we've done it several times, the Kabbalistic idea of a time frame, the time period. This time period that we're in, and the Jewish calendar in essence has the concept of spiritual reality. Now, what is the spiritual reality? Again, we've discussed it many times. The Kabbalistic idea that Hashem created the world, and when He created the world, He created 1 year, and in it He imbued every day with a spiritual reality. Every day has a spiritual reality. And in essence, as the calendar goes through, there are certain days that even have more spiritual essence of the day than, let's say, the week, the regular weekday. And we've discussed, again, the idea of Rosh Hashanah has its day, the new year, right? The power of earning your existence and life itself is imbued on the Jewish New Year. Passover, freedom, not just remembering or commemorating freedom. The actual idea of being able to spiritually release you from bonds is on Passover. And we're going to be dealing with another holiday coming up Saturday night. Actually, it's the day of it is actually Friday night, but it's pushed off because it's Shabbat. Saturday night, we're dealing with another holiday called Tisha B'Av. And we've discussed this previously. The novel idea is not only that Hashem has the power, I shouldn't even say it in such a fashion, Hashem created the essence of spiritual reality in each day. The other novel concept is that the Jewish people, that power was given down to us. And in essence, as a people, we have the ability to create spiritual reality on the days themselves also. And that's exactly what we did on Tisha B'Av. It's exactly what we did on Tisha B'Av. What spiritual reality did we create on Tisha B'Av? We created spiritual reality of Jewish mourning and destruction. We created it. What was it? When the Jewish spies went into the land of Israel, when we were going into the land of Israel, the Jewish people came to Moses and said to him, we got to send spies into the land of Israel. Why do we have to send spies? God said, you're going to be able to do it. You'll be able to accomplish. You'll be able to go and conquer it. Jewish people said, no, you know what? We can't rely on miracles. Hashem expects us to live in this world. And once we live in the land of Israel, it's not going to be miraculous like Egypt all the time. We got to be able to fight battles. We have to be able to live life. So how does any normal army work? You send in spies, reconnaissance. See how what the weak points, strong points, where can we attack? Where can we not attack? Moshe agrees. So they send 12 spies. 12 spies go in. 10 of them come back with a report that they can't do it. We can't win. Essence of failure. We can't do it. We cannot go in. We will not win. And they turned the entire Jewish people to cry that night. That night, says the oral law, the Gemara tells us, that night was Tisha B'Av. That night was the ninth of Av. And they, in essence, turned the spiritual reality of the day of the ninth of Av into a night of mourning for eternity. Because God said at that moment, the Gemara tells us, from that moment on, through all eternity, the day of Tisha B'Av will be a day of pain from generation to generation. All Jewish destruction, mourning, will come from that moment on into eternity. Lauren, can you open the door? Sean can't get in for some reason.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Why is the decision of 10 Jewish people?
The entire Jewish people cried that night. They affected the entire Jewish nation to cry. And in essence, when the entire Jewish people cried and saying, we cannot enter, we cannot get into the land of Israel, at that point, it was over. That was it. We sealed for us for eternity that night. We did it, not Hashem. God was just telling us a consequence of our actions. That crying, that night of failure, the lack of belief in not only God, but the lack of belief in ourselves and our connection to Hashem, that caused the greatest destruction going forward into the future that affected the spiritual reality of the day itself. That's exactly what it says. I'll give you something to cry about. But that means it wasn't God being a bad bully. It was Hashem telling us, this is the spiritual reality. This is what you did. This is your consequence of what you just did to the spiritual reality of the day called the ninth of Av. And as we've learned, as we saw, the ninth of Av going forward into history, what happened? Everyone remember what happened over the ninth of Av? The destruction of the first temple, destruction of
second temple,
the destruction of all Jewish, the rebellion against Rome, in essence, 30 years after the destruction of the temple, there was a rebellion of Rome. We actually won for 2 years, and the Roman came back to destroy us and wipe us out and kick us from the land of Israel, and basically started the process where we are till this day, basically spread across around the world. What day was that final destruction? Take a wild guess.
Tisha B'Av.
Tisha B'Av, right? When was the first crusade started that killed over 1 million Jews? Tisha B'Av. When was the, I'm just giving, there's so many more. There's dates and dates and dates of different things that have happened. But when was the Spanish Inquisition?
Tisha B'Av.
Tisha B'Av. Right? Are we seeing a pattern here? When was World War I started?
Tisha B'Av.
Tisha B'Av. When was the final solution signed into as law, basically, by the Nazis?
Tisha.
Take a wild guess. Tisha B'Av. When was the Warsaw Rebellion burned down to the ground in Warsaw against the Nazis? Take a wild guess. Tisha B'Av. When was Gaza in 2004? I was there a month before doing patrols. When was the expected date of the destruction of the Jewish community in Gaza, basically pulling all of Jews out of Gaza? What date was that set for?
Tisha B'Av.
Tisha B'Av. Are we seeing a pattern? We're seeing a pattern, a crazy, incredible pattern. The idea, the concept that it was inbuilt, embedded into the spiritual reality. That's one way to see it. This thing is real. It's not made up. It's not in the sky. It's not fluffy ideas. It's real as real gets. Spiritual reality is reality. That is, again, something of a concept that we have a difficulty understanding and constantly implanting in us and being able to live it in a daily experience. But it's real as it gets.
So, Rabbi, I have a question. If we want to change the spiritual reality, why do we mourn then?
So let's get there. That's where I'm building. That's a perfect introduction. That's where exactly one. That's my main question. That was my main question from the beginning, right? Of the idea of, well, okay, so what does the mourning aspect of us do? What does it do? So I wanna connect. That's exactly where we're going right now. So the idea is summed up. Let me take you back just this on this concept. Move back, and let's go into now the time frame of the destruction of the second temple. And we're going to be able to learn an incredibly powerful idea. Incredibly powerful idea. The idea is this. Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. Who is here has heard of Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai? Please raise your hand. Please raise your hand high if you've heard of Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. 1, 2, 3, 4 people. Do you know Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai? Probably has influenced... Not probably, has influenced Judaism more than any, Judaism as far as how we live it today and how you're living it today, more than any other person in all of Jewish history, including Moshe. Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai himself and obviously the other rabbis at the time has influenced the way you live right now, your Jewish life, more than any other Jew that's probably lived in all of history. And we don't know who he is, basically. So let's try to figure this out. Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, he's alive during the destruction of the temple. He's around that time. He's one of the leading rabbi of the time. He is what's called the head of the Sanhedrin. The president of the Jewish court is 71 sages. The highest court amongst the Jewish people, and in essence, the leader of the Jewish people, because at this point, there's no king, there's no official leader, it's Rome in charge, and now there's a rebellion against Rome.
Supreme Court.
Supreme Court, yeah. So there is another Jewish group, and this is the insanity of it. Other Jewish group that is called the Sakarim. The Sakarim are the ones, literally they're named as, Sakarim is just a messed up translation from Sekinim. Sekinim is what in Hebrew?
Knives.
Why were they called the knives? Because they used to knife people. They were incredibly aggressive and we'll call zealots. They wanted to fight against Rome, whether do or die, meaning we either fight against Rome or everyone should commit suicide and die. A lot of the conceptual maybe idea of concepts, everyone on Birthright went on what's the famous?
Masada.
Yeah. Right? So they say that Masada was, at least according to some opinions, were the leaders of these guys basically ended it all. So they were so aggressive, they were even aggressive against the rabbis and the leaders of the time. Because a lot of the leaders, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, said, we shouldn't fight against Rome. We should do what? Capitulate. Say, you guys are the masters, no problem. We're going to listen to you. Just let us keep our temple, let us keep our religion. We'll do whatever you want. You want us to pay taxes, you're the leaders, no problem. These guys said, no way. Nationalism, no way can a non-Jew rule in the land of Israel. And there was a massive argument. So much so that there was Jew fighting Jew. It got as crazy that these fanatics, and we looked at them as fanatics, burned all of the food in Jerusalem, inside the walls of Jerusalem, that was enough to last for at least 20 years. They burned all of it. So in order to create a pressure to go outside to fight the Romans. Can you imagine? While the Romans are coming in and breaking through into the old city, Jews are fighting Jews. These zealots are fighting other groups that they don't like. This is all what's happening. So much so that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, in order to go out to negotiate with the Romans, because he sees the writing is on the wall, they're literally breaking into the old city, right? Into the walls of the old city, the whole Roman legions, or powerful Roman legions, are breaking through to rape, kill, destroy, plow the city, destroy the temple. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is telling these guys, like, I'm going to go negotiate, and sending messages, and they said, basically, if you go out there, we're going to kill you. So he's going to negotiate, but how is he going to go negotiate? He fakes his death. He actually fakes his death. And his students are carrying his body out, and they have like a whole funeral procession for Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, again, the greatest rabbi of the time. And one of the zealots comes up and says, I'm going to stick a sword through the coffin, basically. And they stop them and say, what are you going to... You're going to disgrace the body, which is obviously a Jewish concept. That's why there's problems of doing, like we were talking about, problems of doing autopsies on Jews, but that's leaving that out for now. But we all know that that is a problem. So they say to him, you're going to basically do an autopsy on the greatest rabbi? For what purpose? No purpose? Just to make sure he's dead? You're crazy. So at that point, they raise up their hands and they say, you're right. And they let him through. And that's how he got through. He goes through and he meets with Vespasian. Vespasian is the head general of Rome. Now Vespasian, actually, when he meets Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, he's like impressed. He's like, wow, this guy is unbelievable. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, it's a whole longer discussion, just give you a quick idea. He says to him, you are going to be king in Caesar. And he tells him a whole reason why, when those who conquer Jerusalem and become the king, there's a whole discussion. But in essence, a messenger comes and tells him, the king, the Caesar in Rome is dead, you are now Caesar. And Vespasian is like blown away by this rabbi. He's like, are you kidding me? Like, how did you know? Where did you know this? Whatever you ask me, I'm giving you three wishes, it's yours. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai gets three wishes from Vespasian, now the Caesar in Rome, who was the commanding general at that point, coming to destroy Jerusalem. So he says to him three things. Press pause. Three things. Imagine, you're the leader of the Jewish people now. The Jewish people are at the point of destruction. It's imagine the level of the Holocaust. You have the opportunity now, basically from, in quotes, Hitler, to three things. Because he's so impressed by you, he's like, okay, three things, whatever you want. Watch what three things he asks for. Number one, I want the holy, holy Rabbi Tzaddik. He's very, very sick. He's been fasting for 40 years and he's about to be on his deathbed. Fasting for 40 years. What does that mean, fasting? Not eating at all? No, it means that during the day he fasts and only eats a little bit at night. And he's been doing this for 40 years. Why? Because he sees the level of the Jewish people going down and down and down. And he's seeing the destruction in front of his eyes for the last 40 years. And he's about to die right now. We need to get him a doctor. That's first request. Second request. He says to them, I want you to be able to give me the sages of Yavna. The sages of Yavna. Save this, the sages of Yavna and its school. Don't destroy it. Don't destroy it. Sages of Yavna and a few rabbis studying. That's it? Yeah. That's all I'm asking. Done. Sages of Yavna, no problem. Say the rabbis later in a different Gemara. What should have he asked for?
Don't kill anybody.
What should he ask for?
Save Jerusalem, leave it to
me.
Say, what should he ask for?
Get out of here.
Leave the temple.
Leave the temple.
Yeah.
Save the Jews. What are you asking for? So much so that Rabbi Akiva, the great Rabbi Akiva, either it's Rabbi Yosef or Rabbi Akiva, it's an argument who said it, but anyway, says that the sages at certain points in time, God flips over their wisdom in order to make sure history happens. He says it's such a big question, he doesn't understand. What were you thinking? You asked for a small little yeshiva? You got the temple. We got the temple. What are you asking for? Are you kidding me? So much so, it's such a question to Rabbi Akiva that he must have said he had to bring a whole crazy verse saying that sometimes God flips over the wisdom of the sages and makes them dumb, in essence, in order that history transpires. Such a question. What was he thinking? Save the temple. Save all Jewish history. What are we going to be without the temple? So much is such a powerful question that the last day of his life, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, asks on his last day of his life, the Gemara tells us the last day of his life, the students are around him and he asks them, they ask him, why are you crying? Because he was crying. They asked him, why are you crying? Because he asks and says, I don't know where I'm going. Meaning, in essence, I don't know if I'm going up to, you know, I guess in bad translation, heaven. I don't know if I'm going to the good place. I don't know if you're going to the good place. What kind of question is that? Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai was the leader of the Jewish people, studied for 40 years, taught the Jewish people for 40 years, was an earnest person that loved and only did good acts for the Jewish people, and he doesn't know where he's going? Really? Yeah, he doesn't know. You know why? Because of this moment. Critical mass of the Jewish people. Do you know that all of Jewish history was on this moment? Second Temple, destroyed, gone. He could have asked. He could have asked and said, save it, don't destroy it. Vespasian said, no problem. I'm giving you three wishes. Take whatever you want. And he says, save a sage. Give us this place called Yavna where we can study. And he doesn't mention the temple. And the Romans go in and they destroy the temple, burn it down. And we still, till this day, don't have it. So that one decision, one moment, there's certain times in life that's a critical, tremendous moment in life that could affect your entire life from one moment. And not only did it affect his entire life, but it affected all of our entire lives. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. In such a powerful moment, such an incredibly powerful moment, that this incredibly righteous sage of the Jewish people was so even confused to the last day of his life on his deathbed. He wasn't sure if his decision that he made was correct, because it affected so many, the destiny of the Jewish people, so many lives, so many Jewish lives, from that point on to the future. He was so confused even from that moment.
What was the third guy?
What was the third one? I'll get to it. The idea is that one idea, one concept could mess up your entire, eclipse your entire life. One major decision could eclipse your entire life. We ask the question, there's another famous question. To answer this, to be able to answer the question, is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, did he make the right decision? Did he make the right decision? How do we know? To be able to understand this, let's go a little bit deeper. And in order to understand that, let's try to ask another question. The sages say that the day that that the temple actually was burnt down was when? Tisha B'Av? It was actually the next day, the 10th of Av. The majority of the temple was actually burnt down on the 10th. Haha, fooled you. So I guess on my ninth doesn't work, right?
They started the fire on the 9th.
Oh, they started the fire on the 9th. So the way that one of the rabbis answer, Rabbi Aaron Cutler, he says like this. On the 10th, yes, the actual physical presence was destroyed. The sticks and stones were destroyed on the 10th. You know what was destroyed on the 9th? The spiritual reality of the place. The ability of Titus, Vespasian's son, the one that had The discussion with Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. The one that had that whole discussion, his son then becomes the general and he goes and destroys the temple. That he, a physical, mortal human being that can go in and destroy the temple, that means it was what? It was already destroyed. It was only a physical sticks and stones. The temple is not sticks and stones. What is the temple? What is the essence of the temple? What does that mean, spiritual? It's Hashem's presence. The concentration of Hashem's presence in this world. It's there. That's where it is. What's called the Shekhinah. In essence, that whole idea. Let's kind of build this up. Let's try to clearly understand this. God created the world, right? How did He create it? Let's ask, we've asked this question previously, but let's go over it again. How is it possible that God, who is infinite, create something that is finite? Again, I don't want to confuse anyone. I'm just going to make it very basic. How could it be that something that is infinite, that means all-encompassing, that's outside of time and space, create something that's physical and fit himself in the finite? It's impossible. It's impossible. Logically, it's impossible. Where is God in this finite world? Now, if we put him in a finite world, he's finite. That means he can't be God. And yet we know he exists and we know that God exists. How is that possible? The way the Kabbalists bring it down is that he had to create. What was the second thing? What was the first level of creation? Time and space. What was the next thing? Light. And then what is after?
Night.
Darkness. What is the point of darkness? What do you have to have darkness for?
So you can have light.
What's the opposite? What, say it again?
So you can have light.
The opposite. So you can have?
You have darkness, so you can have light.
So you can, what is the point of darkness?
Contrast.
To be able to cover the
light.
Hashem creates barriers. How did he create this world? In essence, he had to, and again, Kabbalists, I'm not explaining it now, that's not the point of the class, but the idea is to create barriers, more barriers, more barriers, more barriers, more barriers, in order that what? You can go from infinity to finite. As you're creating more barriers, it's becoming more material, more finite. And in essence, creating what? Barriers and blocks between this world and Hashem. Once you create those barriers, what is the essence? What is the point? What is the key, most singular point in being able to see Hashem, the light? What point in this world has the greatest light to see Hashem? The temple. That's exactly what it is. It's the ability to break through. It's like, you know, if you look at they're seeing pictures of the black holes, right? Starting to see pictures of the black holes. Mm-hmm. If you look at it, the temple is that black hole being able to pierce through it. It's the one point of light. It's the be able to see, break through all the barriers. It's right there. It's that perfect connection. It's open. It's light. It's right there. So from that moment, right there is the key point. That is the key point, key moment. It's the temple. How does a mortal human being erase it? He can't. He can't. The destruction comes about. How does that point of light, where does it come from? How is it engaged? How is it there? How is it there? From the Jewish people. From the Jewish people. The only ability to have the light that's there is if we are there and we are present and we are engaging in acts of bringing the light down. Once we, in essence, are not engaged in that, the light disappears. The block is put back up. The veil comes back down. And therefore, all that's left is sticks and stones. What happened on Tisha B'Av? What happened on Tisha B'Av was the extinguishing of that light. The extinguishing of that light. The light was gone. It's over. It's extinguished. Gone. No more. That happened on Tisha B'Av. At that point, the structure can be plowed. It's just sticks and stones. It's another part of the materials of this world. It's meaningless. The place was made meaningless. It was made empty. Once it's empty, it can be destroyed. Why is this significant? Why is this significant? The sages tell us that the destruction came about because Jew hated Jew. Jew hated Jew. Baseless hatred. We hated each other for different reasons. We hated each other for different groups. We hated each other because you followed one thing and I followed another. And the idea of baseless hatred, it wasn't just not a nice thing to do. It caused the spiritual reality of hiding up and completely taking away God's presence, clarity and presence in this world. It was taken away. All for that moment. What was Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai doing? What was he doing? Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, what was he doing? Why didn't he save the temple? Save the temple! It's right there. Why not? Very simple. It's already gone. It's gone already. Who wiped it out? The Jewish people. We did it. There's no point anymore. It's gone. What's the only thing that can bring it back? What's the only thing that can bring it back?
The light.
The light. What can bring it back? The Jewish people. Mm-hmm. The light. Studying who we are. Studying and understanding what we're about. What are the purposes? The learning. The sages. The Torah itself. The continuation of the Jewish people itself. That's what's critical. That's what was on his mind. And in essence, he asked for one other thing that I didn't mention. He asked for the continuation of Rabbi Gamliel's lineage. Who is Rabbi Gamliel's lineage? He's from King David. And King David is connected to?
Mashiach.
The idea of the lineage and destiny of the Jewish people. That's what's important. That's what's got to continue. But in our generation right now, do we have a concept of what the light is? Do we have a concept of what our destiny is? Do we have a concept of what we're here for? What our purpose is? This is all fluffy ideas. I'm into making money. I'm into my career. I'm into LA. America. It's passé, it's too difficult. Jewish ideas, concepts, life, Jewish life, lifestyle, come on. These are all nice ideas. I didn't grow up with it. Who needs it? What's the purpose? The purpose of the morning is to wake you up and realize you are a part of Jewish destiny. You are a part of it. The pain, sometimes it's sad to say, but this is reality. More times you will be woken up from pain than from happiness. More times you will be inspired and woken up and understand from pain rather than happiness. In some sense, anyone that's gone to Poland can say, you know, in some ways, going to Poland is much more of a powerful experience even than going to Israel. Because you can awake yourself from the pain. You realize, wow, this is real. It did happen. It's a part of it. And I'm a part of it. I'm a part of Jewish destiny. You know what? And why are we doing these traditions, not eating meat and not properly showering with hot water and putting on these hipster beards? What's the point of it? The point of it is for you right now to realize I am a part of Jewish destiny and I'm connecting to it. But in such a deeper fashion, take a look. I've got props for you today. I probably should have put it on screens, but everyone's been to this place, correct?
Western Wall.
Right? This is the Western Wall. And this is?
Temple.
The temple. This is what it looked like. The West. This is exactly the same picture. Up above and up above. Right there is the Western Wall. Right there is the Western Wall. Right? Everyone see that? Right. There is the Western Wall. There is the Western Wall. You're exactly looking at the same thing.
Yeah.
Just one is today and one is 2,000 years ago. Here, pass it around just so you can see it. And I got one more prop for you. Again, I wish I should have, now I thought I should have put it on the big screen, but it's okay. Everyone know what this is?
This is the Arc de Triomphe.
This is what? Anyone know? Can take a look. Elad, take a look. Don't miss this. What is this? This is Rome, modern day Rome. This is still there. You can go there. I was there. This is modern day Rome. Right? It's the... In where the next to the Colosseum, if you walk down the what's it called?
The Senate, the area of the Senate.
The area of the Senate. If you walk past the Colosseum down, there's a whole area, the ruins, that's right next to it. It's called the area of the Senate. This is still there. It's the original building. It was built how long ago? 2,000 years ago. This was built 2,000 years ago. You know what it was built for? You know who is it built for? The arch is named the Arch of Titus. Who is Titus? What? Who was Titus? So you're clear. Who was Titus?
The general.
The general who destroyed the temple. This is live. You don't need archaeology. This still stands. You don't need some archaeologist to build it for you and create it and say, ooh, this is what it was, and everyone's got to argue about it. No one argues about this. This is called the Arch of Titus. You can go it, you can see it live, you can taste it, you can feel it, you can put your hands on, they might smack you if you try to put your hands there, but that's a different story, right? It's real. It's there. It's by the general who destroyed the temple. This is the guy. His father was Vespasian. His father was the guy that had the conversation with who? Rav Yochanan ben Zakkain. That's the guy that you had. We're talking about it. It's affected the Jewish people. This is live. This is real. Who is this guy? That's actually a real statue of Titus. It's a real picture of him. You're looking at him live. This is the guy that destroyed the temple. You're looking at him live. And look inside this, the arch. It's a picture inside the arch. You can go, you can see it. It's right there. What is this?
Treasure.
What?
No,
take a look.
It's the Jews being robbed.
It's 2,000. It's a picture of 2,000 years ago. It's a live photograph. It's a live photograph. It's not history. It's real. It's in front of you. It's a live photograph from 2,000 years ago built into this arch by the Romans, showing them destroying the temple and taking out the menorah and different goods, and could be even the, which looks like the ark, which is argued about. But it's the Jews. These are Jews. These are slaves, enslaved now. Jews being taken into captivity. 2,000 years ago, you are looking at a picture of the destruction of the temple from 2,000 years ago, of exactly what we just described. This is real. You know what it's real about? Why are we mourning? Why are we eating, all doing these practices, not eating meat, not taking proper showers, beards, fasting on Tisha B'Av? You know why? Because this is real. It happened. And you know what you're doing when you're saying it? When you do these acts? I'm the one that this happened to. Not just connecting in a general term. You are saying with your mouths and your actions. This event, as you can see with your eyes, that you see with your eyes, it's as real as it gets. It's the reality of the Jewish people. It's the fact that spiritual reality is reality. That's what I'm saying. I am connecting. I am the same person. I am the person of the people that this happened to 2,000 years ago. That what happened? That the destruction of the temple happened. What day was that? Tisha B'Av. What day was that? The reality of spiritual destruction that who? That my people, that we caused. And it's reminding me and understanding to me, spiritual reality is reality. It's reality. Because I see it, I taste it, I see it, it's real. I just have to put on the right glasses to see it. Because if I put on the right glasses, I know that it's real. It's tangible. It's right in front of us. Here are the pictures. It's right there. You can't lie. You stood at the temple. You stood at the Kotel and touched the walls. It's real. What is it saying when you're touching? I'm transforming myself back 2,000 years ago and saying, I am the people that this happened to, that caused this destruction. And you know what? A famous statement. In every generation that the temple is not rebuilt, it's as if it's destroyed. What is it saying? In every generation that the temple is not rebuilt, it's as if it's destroyed. It's saying that you have the power. You have the power. You have to realize and wake up. You have the power. It's in your hands. This is not games. These are not toys. These are not inventions. These are not historical ideas of what happened to the folklore of our Jewish people and the culture. Nonsense. It's reality. Look at it. It's reality. You have the picture of the killer of what happened. And then it happened all in Tisha B'Av. And that's what happened for every generation. The destruction. All leading back to the original Tisha B'Av, when we couldn't believe in ourselves of doing what? What couldn't we believe in? What didn't we believe in the first original Tisha B'Av when we sent the spies? What did we say? We can't.
Rely on miracles.
We can't do it. We can't win. What does that mean, we can't win? We don't have the ability to connect ourselves fully with the light. The original Tisha B'Av. We don't have the ability to connect ourselves with the light. We don't have the ability to what? Show the light to the world. That original point, which is right where? Right here. Which was the seed for the destruction of this place. That was the seed to the destruction of this place. So when you're touching this wall, you're touching the spiritual reality, the seed of what all of the world is. The point to be able to see and realize the tangibility of what spirituality really is. The ability to really see, feel, taste, understand Hashem in this world. That's covered up. That's been covered up. That's been destroyed. How is that destroyed? By the Jewish people, not by the physical place, but the spiritual place, which then builds the physical. That was destroyed. And in our generation, if you look at it, where's the Jewish people? Where are the Jewish people? How many people have a concept to this to these ideas? What's our goal? What's our destiny? What's our purpose? How many of our understanding that this is real? Understand that can even analyze and put on the glasses, in essence, to be able to see the reality of this. The reality of our destiny, the reality of who we are, and how true and tangible it is. It's not this spiritual, fluffy ideas. It's real. It's right here. Take a look. How many people are assimilating? How many people have any knowledge of this? Our goal, our purpose. It's Jewish culture, if that at best. In our world right now, Jewish culture is an amazing thing. At least that. At least some people are connected some way to the Jewish people. If a person's connected to Jewish culture, at least that. But in the grand scope of things, where are we? That's the real mourning. That's the mourning where we are right now. Our goal and our purpose is to bring it back to the understanding of we're getting back here not because we want to build up a big synagogue in Jerusalem. That's not the idea. Our goal and prayers are not, oh, let's build that big, big synagogue so everyone can go and take pictures and say, wow, on my birthday trip, I was at a big synagogue called the temple. Yay! That's not the idea. The idea is to rebuild spirituality, the reality to make an understanding to the world, what you're here for, what you're living for, what the goal and the destiny is of all humanity. To reveal the light that is here, the reality of what it is. And how far we are from it. So this Tisha B'Av, if you have an ability to do fast at night, Saturday night, not a big deal. Try that. If you have the ability to do it the entire day, wow, amazing. If you have the ability not to wash yourself, not to do any of it, to figure out, you can look on, you can Google it, you can see what, if you want to ask me a little later what specific laws there are, we can talk about it. That's not the point of the discussion right now. The discussion right now is to realize when we're mourning, we're connecting ourselves to this, the reality of what this is, what it means, what you're here for, what your purpose is, what your goals are. And understanding that it's upon us, the Jewish people, me, you, to reconnect the light, to reestablish it. It's not just God, just do it. No, it's you, Jewish people, just do it. It says that in a famous story that in the late 1700s, early 1800s, Napoleon was walking by a synagogue. Few synagogues. He was in the Jewish area in a Jewish ghetto and he was walking by. And by the time he walked by, like the second or third synagogue, he heard moaning and crying in each one. And he actually asked his advisor, you know, like, go check out what's going on. Like, we went by the Jews at 2-3 different synagogues, like, they're just crying and moaning and we're hearing like all this commotion, like, what's going on with them? So they report, the guy reported back to Napoleon and said, report is that the temple in Jerusalem was destroyed. He's like, wait a minute, I didn't hear about any temple and I definitely didn't hear about anyone that was destroyed. What are we talking about? No, it was destroyed about 1700 years ago. And they're still crying about it? And Napoleon reportedly said, if they're crying about it for 1700 years, then destiny shall for sure have it that they will one day rebuild it. And I'll finish with this concept and this idea. Unbelievable story that saw it written in a couple different places. A few years ago, there's, I think I mentioned this rabbi to you before, Rabbi Grossman. Got unbelievable things that happened to him, special person. Anyway, there is a Moti Datan, which is a politician in Israel, was going to the Bavarian capital in Munich. I guess they have the in Germany. They have, you know what? My father passed away a week ago, and he left me with something that I'm not necessarily comfortable about, and I'm not comfortable with the story, but I'm going to tell you anyway, and it was his dying wish, so I'm going to do it. So guys listening, like, okay, what is it? He says, it's this, and he gives him over a wallet that's a little bit strange material, very strange material. He says, okay, you know, he takes it, he says, you have to give this. His father's dying wish was the following. He says, my father was in the Wehrmacht, in Germany. He was a pilot in Nazi Germany, in the Air Force of the Nazis. And in one of the times, he said he went into, in Poland, I guess this was his break, and for fun, they went into a town and started looting. And as they did with their policy, they went into the town, they shot, they killed, and then they went into the synagogue and burned it and destroyed it. And he said he went in there and he saw the Sefer Torah was lying on the ground. So he said he was actually thinking, he was looking for a cover, like a nice wallet for his document of being a part of the Nazi war machine, you know, the Wehrmacht, which was very prestigious. So he said, you know, this material of this Torah scroll of the Jews would make a perfect wallet. So he cut out the whole thing and made it, a portion of it, into a wallet. He says on his dying deathbed, he said to his son, I want you to give this to a Jew, the first Jew you meet, and if you can ask him to give it to the holiest rabbi he knows in Israel. And maybe this will give me some kind of solace or redemption for my acts that I did as a Nazi. So, Rabbi, this Moti Datan, this guy, this Israeli politician, goes and he meets with Rabbi Gustman and he gives him the wallet and he tells him the whole story. And before they finish, he says, okay, you know, he's like shaking, you know, looking at this wallet as he opens it up and he unravels it and takes it apart. And he sees, he opens it up, it's still like he can still make out the letters and what portion it was in the Torah. In the portion that he read, it was actually the rebuke of all the difficult things and all the travesties and all the things that will happen to the Jewish people if we don't listen to Hashem as a nation. And as it finishes, the last line, it says, Atem nitzavim ayom, you are standing, everyone in front of you, kolchem ayom, everyone are standing. That's what it's, the last line that it's cut out. And the Rashi tells him, the Rashi, the explanation on that statement. Everyone is standing here today. Because it says, after you hear all the destruction and all the pain and all the suffering, you, the Jewish people, will want to maybe run away and not be a part of it. Don't worry, you will be my people. Just as the day will last, you will last also forever. You will be an eternal nation. And you are standing today all together. You will last for eternity. The amazing part is, if you looked at that moment with the Nazis making the wallet for himself, you look at the Torah scroll, you look at the Jewish people, you look at the synagogue, what is it? Who's winning? The Nazis. And where are the Jewish people? Going to be extinct. It's over. Coming back to Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, it looks like the same thing. It's all over. The temple is going to be destroyed. It's all finished. It's all done. What do I have to do to make sure it continues? The Jewish people. The eternity of the Jewish people. Every single one of you here have to look at that. You want to be able to continue the Jewish people, the lineage. It's you. It's not traditions. It's not sentimentality. It's not culture. It's reality. It's being a part of Jewish destiny. Thank you for coming. Oh, I mentioned Rabbi Gamliel, Mashiach, light.
Huh?